Hello and welcome to Managing IP's first IP Masterclass. Today we will be discussing IP in Africa, and I am joined by three partners from Spohr & Fisher, who are all in Jersey, and they're going to be telling us about the exciting world of IP on the continent. So I will be introducing our first guest, Wayne Mooring, who is partner at Spohr & Fisher in Jersey. Wayne, I'll take it over to you.
Hello. I'm the managing director of Spohr & Fisher Jersey, and I am joined by my two colleagues, Margaret Legel and Chris Walters. Margaret is the head of our Africa patents practice, and Chris Walters is the head of our trademark litigation department, with particular responsibility for all contentious work and anti-counterfeiting. All three of us are, as you have said, based in our Jersey office, where we handle all intellectual property matters across Africa, in particular to the north of South Africa. Our associated office, Spohr & Fisher South Africa, handles work in the Southern African region. By way of background, Spohr & Fisher was created in South Africa in 1920 and was and remains a law firm that specializes in all aspects of IP. Throughout its history, the firm has handled work in the whole of Africa, but because of the politics at the time and limited local communications, the firm expanded in 1977 with the opening of our office in Jersey Channel Islands, which is where Chris, Margaret, and I are all based.
Cool. Okay. So our first question today is, what are some of the most important jurisdictions for IP on the continent? I'll give this to you, Wayne.
Thank you. We would say, of course, that all countries in Africa where an IP rights holder intends selling their products or services are equally important. But from an economic perspective, the most important jurisdictions would certainly include Nigeria, Egypt, South Africa, Algeria, Morocco, Kenya, Ethiopia, Ghana, Tanzania, Angola, as well as the two regional offices known by the acronyms ARIPO and OARPI. Africa is the only continent in the world which has two regional offices that we will elaborate on later. But in summary, OARPI, which is mainly French-speaking, covers 17 member countries in West Africa. And ARIPO, which is largely made up of English-speaking African countries, offers protection for 11 countries in respect of trademarks, and 18 member countries in respect of patents. As you will hear from Margaret and Chris, we generally only recommend using the ARIPO system to protect patents. There are some concerns regarding the effectiveness and enforceability of ARIPO trademark registrations in several of the member states.
Thank you, Wayne. So as you said, there are two IP offices on the continent, the English-speaking one and the French-speaking one. Do inventors and brand owners only need to file in these two offices, or would you advise a country-by-country approach? I'm going to give this to Margaret for patents, and then Chris, if you could tell us about trademarks.
Yeah, sure. Starting with patents, ARIPO and OARPI are a very effective means of obtaining extensive protection in Africa. Between them, the regional offices cover up to 35 countries. The first regional office is ARIPO, the African Regional Intellectual Property Office. By way of background, the ARIPO office was created in 1976, and membership is open to all member states of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. The headquarters are in Harare in Zimbabwe. As mentioned, 18 countries are members of the protocol governing patents, the Harare Protocol. The majority of these member states are English-speaking countries, and all communication with the ARIPO office is therefore in English. All of these countries are also members of the Patent Cooperation Treaty, more commonly known as the PCT. ARIPO specifically requires the applicant to designate those member states where protection is sought, and filing fees then vary with the number of designations. A patent granted by ARIPO has the same effect as a patent granted under the national laws. Broadly speaking, it is both simpler and more cost-effective to file a single application designating multiple countries than to file nationally in each of those countries. The other regional office is OARPI. First established in 1962, most member states are former French colonies in West Africa. The headquarters are in Yaoundé in Cameroon. Official communications from the office are issued in French, but it is possible to file in English, and a French translation is not required. Unlike a repo, it is not possible to designate individual countries, and a single patent application automatically covers all 17 member states. Also, unlike a repo, it is not possible to obtain patent protection nationally in any of the member states, as all member countries have renounced their national IP laws in favour of OAPI. It is important to note, however, that some very important countries are not members of either of these regional offices, and national applications must therefore be filed. In South Africa and Nigeria, for example, are two of the largest economies in Africa, but they are not members of either regional office.
Okay. Yeah. Just a quick question, Margaret. Because you have to file in all of the countries when you file at the French office,
yes.
Is that why you would recommend going through the English office? Because if you only want to file in, like, let's make it up, four countries, that you can handpick which ones you want? Is that what makes the English office a bit easier?
It obviously depends which countries are of importance to your portfolio.
Right.
That will determine which office you use.
Yeah, OAPI and ARIPA, they cover different member countries. They have different member countries. So Margaret says, if you want OAPI, you get those 17 member countries. Well, it's all or nothing, really. But a repo have an entirely different membership, and for a repo, you designate the particular countries of interest.
Okay, that sounds efficient.
It's really kind of broken down by language group. So the old what were, I suppose, French and Belgian colonies in Africa, where French is the primary language of commerce. Those are OAPI member countries. ARIPO are largely former English-speaking countries or countries where there's a high number of English-speaking people. So it's they're different regions that are covered.
That makes sense. So, Chris, trademarks. What's the deal with trademarks at the two offices?
Well, the position for trademarks, broadly speaking, in OAPI pretty good. The system works very well, and the RP office is well organized. It deals with matters very methodically, albeit in a bit of a slow way. As Margaret explained with the ORP patent system, the trademark system in ORP has likewise replaced the national regimes of the member countries. So you can no longer file nationally if you want coverage in one of the ORP countries. You have to file a central ORP application. But it's an all-or-nothing regime. So once an OAPI trademark is registered, it automatically covers all 17 member states, and those member states are mostly West and Central African countries. A repo, which works well for patents, as Margaret has explained, is much more complicated from a trademark perspective. We've mentioned a couple of times that there's different member countries for patent and trademark purposes in a repo. There's some overlap, but there are only 11 member states for trademark purposes. And there's some real problems with potential enforceability of a repo trademark registrations. The reasons are historical, but mainly because most of the member states of a repo are old English colonies at one time in their history, and they have English common law as their legal heritage. And in terms of that legal heritage, a treaty such as the treaty which established ARIPO can't be self-enacting. You have to have national legislation to take into account the obligations which arise under a national treaty. And only a few of the ARIPO member states for trademark purposes, I stress that it's different for patents, but for trademark purposes, there are only a couple of member states that have amended their national legislation to take into account the obligations that they assumed under the ARIPO treaty. So speaking as a trademark litigator, I would advise people to think very carefully before they choose to protect their trademarks by the ARIPO route. I would always recommend for trademark purposes that they use the national filing route rather.
Go line item by line item. Okay. So examination. Are patents examined in any of the IP offices? This is a big question. Margaret, I'll hand this to you.
Yes, I mean, historically, there's been a lack of qualified and experienced patent examiners, but things are changing, and increasing numbers of countries across Africa do now conduct examination. Of the two regional offices that we've just been discussing, they both have provision for examination in their law, but at present only a repo examines as to substance. In OAPI, examination is limited to sort of a formalities exam, but we do anticipate that eventually they will start to conduct substantive examination as well. In some other jurisdictions, such as Kenya and a repo, examination is actually of a very high standard. The examiners base their objections, if they have any, on objections raised in other examining offices. Some countries, such as Uganda and Ghana, refer their national applications to a repo for examination because they simply don't have the training or the resources themselves to conduct examination. Across the continent, many countries in North Africa conduct examination, and it is anticipated that South Africa will introduce substantive examination in the next year or two, and their examiners are currently being trained.
That's exciting. Okay. And Chris, for trademarks?
Well, the examination of trademarks is, of course, far simpler from a technical point of view than examination of patents. Yeah. And almost all trademark regimes across Africa do have substantive examination for trademark applications. The notable exception is OAPI, where like the patent regime, they only examine for formal compliance. So as long as your application's in order, you've paid the fees and so on, they will they'll register the trademark. It's a double-edged sword, that, because it's advantageous to trademark owners because they get easy and quick registration. But it means that the onus is on trademark owners to watch out for pirate filings, because the office is not going to refuse an application ex officio, even if it's identical to an already registered trademark.
All right. Back to you, Margaret. You said South Africa is training examiners. Is this going to raise the fees in South Africa for patent filing?
I don't know for certain, but I imagine that inevitably it will over time. I mean, filing fees in South Africa are really relatively low at present. And with that level of expertise, I think we can anticipate costs will have to cover that. So, yes.
Okay. And to Chris, what are the major updates people should know about regarding IP laws on the continent?
Well, the first thing to say is that the wheels turn slowly in Africa, especially the legislative wheels. So many of the laws are very old and relatively out of date when you compare them to certainly to Europe and so on. Even though the IP industry has remained active across Africa through the pandemic, there haven't been very many or very many major updates to IP laws in the last couple of years. The one to note, though, is that the Somali Intellectual Property Office has been established. It's important and it's a notable development because I'm sure listeners will recall that Somalia went through a civil war in the early 90s, and the IP office has been closed since the start of the civil war. So it's never been possible to file trademark or patents not since the start of the civil war, so not for over 30 years. It hasn't been possible to file for trademarks or patents in Somalia. There was a local custom of publishing cautionary notices, and it happened, and people published the details of their trademarks in newspapers. But I'm unaware of any litigation that ensued as a result of publishing cautionary notices. But to cut to the chase, the IP office has now been established, and trademark filings are possible. There are a lot of procedural issues that still need to be clarified, and we're expecting IP legislation with transitional provisions that will recognize existing rights. So in other words, pre-1990 rights, that's expected this year. But as I said at the start, the wheels sometimes turn very slowly in Africa. In the meantime, you can continue to publish cautionary notices, but we'd recommend that practice is discontinued and people use the formal route for filing trademarks. There's still no patent or design registration procedure at the moment, and we're not aware of any developments in that regard, but hopefully it'll come online before too much longer.
Was Somalia the last country to not have an IP office? Well, with the war and everything, are there any other countries that don't have IP offices?
Eritrea.
Of course, Eritrea.
Okay.
So, yeah, which split off from Ethiopia some years ago. So they don't have an IP office.
Okay. Good to know. Okay. Enforcement. Do countries have specialized IP courts?
Yeah. Well, on the patent side, only South Africa has specialized IP courts at present. There's been very, very little patent litigation across the rest of the continent so far. But we are confident that where we can obtain patent rights, we can also enforce them. And we'll see how we go over time. But at the present, there's very little precedent to go on. We're confident in most countries. There may be one or two exceptions where it's difficult to get a granted patent rights, such as Angola, just because of a lack of good procedures, basically, at the Patent Institute.
Okay. And Chris, for trademarks?
Well, like patents, there are no specialized courts in Africa for trademark purposes. And speaking as a litigator, this can lead to practical problems because apart from South Africa, where the courts hear a lot of IP cases, the courts in Africa generally hear very few trademark cases, very few patent cases. And the danger is that you come across judges who hear disputes and they misinterpret the laws quite simply because it is a kind of a technical area. Some countries, especially in North Africa, like Tunisia and Morocco, try to compensate by having court-appointed officials, so people who are IP experts. And if a judge comes across a case that he's not really sure of the technical aspects of it, he can refer the matter to an IP expert who will render an opinion that the judge can take into account when he's making his or her decision. But that's as close as you get to specialized courts anywhere in Africa.
Okay. And filing costs. Yes. So I did see a graph a few years ago that the filing costs on the continent for patents. I was wondering if you're like, you know, the small two-man band startup, can you afford to file patents and trademarks across the continent? And is this holding back innovation? So I will hand this over to Margaret. What are your thoughts?
Well, overall, we don't believe that cost is a barrier to innovation, but more does need to be done to educate people regarding the advantages of IP protection. I mean, it's a huge continent and there are huge variations in filing and prosecution costs across it. So it's very difficult to generalize. For example, obtaining a patent in Nigeria is very inexpensive, but other jurisdictions may have very high official fee surcharges. They might have very high renewal costs, such as in Kenya, for example. On the whole, securing patent protection in Africa is really relatively inexpensive compared to perhaps the USPTO or the EPO or Japan and China.
Okay. And Chris, for trademarks?
Yeah, pretty much the same as what Margaret's suggesting. You know, registration is your best friend when it comes to protecting your rights. So costs are a relative concept. It's, you know, it's true that, for example, costs for filing an OIP appear high at first glance, but they're actually pretty reasonable when you consider that an OIP registration covers 17 countries, for example. It's, you know, trademark registration in Africa is the costs vary greatly across the continent, but they're not unreasonably expensive, let me say. Well, certainly I don't believe them to be so.
Okay, good to know. So Wayne, I'm going to hand this back to you. Any final thoughts you would like to share that you think our listeners should know about?
Yeah, I think all things considered, and despite there being no specialized IP courts apart from South Africa, we strongly recommend investing in registering IP rights in Africa. There are a few countries where you have to have a registered right in respect of trademarks to be able to enforce it. So generally speaking, registration is the safest and most cost-effective option. In Africa, it is not unusual for rogue individuals and companies to register foreign brands, even very famous ones, that have not been registered, often leaving the true owners with little or no recourse except paying out a huge settlement in order to retrieve their trademark. Although owners of unregistered trademarks may, in specific circumstances, rely on passing off and, where applicable, provisions for the protection of well-known marks, that process can be arduous and the result uncertain. It is therefore even more important in Africa than elsewhere to register IP rights.
Good to know. All right. Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate your time today. If you have any questions, thoughts, feedback, do not hesitate to email me, charlotte.kilpatrick@legalmediagroup.com. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you, Charlotte. It was great to chat to you.